listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Welcome to Nerds Assemble, episode 136. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
This week we'll be talking about the future of Doctor Who. Definitely Supernatural, apparently. Possibly Elite Dangerous, most likely. Hello. And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and more.
As ever, you can find notes for this episode over on www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. You can tweet us right now at Nerds Podcast. Plus, you can also find this episode on iTunes and Stitcher. So, is it time for Moffat to give up the reins of Doctor Who? This is the question going through my head, and apparently the rest of us a bit. After it was...
Speak for yourself.
Well, Retroid's agreeing with me at the moment.
Yes.
After it was announced that he is staying on until at least season 10.
Season 10.
Season frickin' 10.
Yeah, only two more seasons. It's all right.
You say that, but like I see so many parallels with the situation that's happened with Supernatural at the moment, where Carver's been in charge for the last few seasons, and it's like, right, okay, the last few seasons haven't been great. Can we just kick him somewhere else now? Get a different showrunner, please.
Nah, that's an American show. They'll just tax it. They won't bother with that. It'll just
nah,
be dead.
They've already said like, oh, we want to go to season 12, and that was CW.
Let's move it to Fox because everything just prospers there.
Yeah, damn straight.
Well,
the
Simpsons,
great idea. TV.
But
Simpsons is just channel. You know.
Well, they've lost Mr. Burns this week. So
yes.
Well,
Mr. Burns is gone.
And about half the actor. Other cast.
Yeah.
Well, cast of characters with just one member of the voice cast going.
Yeah.
I will take you down. You cannot survive without me.
Basically, Stephen Moffat's had an interesting time leading Doctor Who, to say the least. Somebody who has a more positive view on him perhaps should start speaking at this point.
Well, he's done all right because he's made it one of the biggest exports the BBC have now.
And he's not as shit at sci-fi as Russell T. Davis is.
Mm. And he's had some very interesting ideas there.
Yeah, he's definitely brought it into a more, I suppose in a way, kind of serious sci-fi-ish type thing, compared to Russell T. Davis's.
Apart from those smarty coloured Daleks.
Smarty Daleks?
Yeah, bastard. Although, I heard that was because they just wanted a new merchandise line.
Did really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I thought they were going into partnership with Smarties with the E's.
He's for exterminate.
If you notice, they've not been used much.
And no. They've been used once, haven't they?
With the other.
They were used once. Everybody said, what a load of rubbish, and they got rid of it. So, yeah, that's a fair comment. But he has had some interesting ideas. And there's been some good stories while he's been showrunner. So.
And then there's been Cybermen taking on the dead.
Well,
I think it was...
If you're going to bring that into it...
The last season of it that was aired is perhaps the season where I was just kind of like, I can't deal with him being in charge anymore. I like the odd episode, but his vision for... or visions for the overall arcs just annoy the hell out of me. Every time.
I thought the last Matt Smith season was really good. Really enjoyed that one. The time of the Doctor and that. But then I was really psyched to see Capaldi come into it, but I never... there was just something missing for the whole season, I think, when I look back at it.
It had odd glimmers, like Orient Express.
Yes, that was a really good episode. Really
that,
enjoyed that.
That reminded me a lot of a Tom Baker sort of era, one where it was present something as supernatural, and then reveal that it's not.
Yeah, it's got a scientific explanation. That was a really good one. quite enjoyed that one. There was the one with the monster under the bed as well. That was a really good one. Really enjoyed that one.
Was that the one with Danny?
I thought that had more promise than it ended up delivering.
It did, but it was still one of the better episodes of the season. It really showed off Capaldi's what he could do, giving a bit more of a tight script and a bit of a better, edgier story too, which was good.
I think it's going to be one of those things that, because Moffat's one of those writers that, viewing his work on the second or third or fourth time round, you get more, you know, little bits and more hints to, you know, what's going on. And I think that's where the appreciation comes from. So if you're going to kind of watch it on TV once, then, you know, it may be confusing and you may think it's going to suck. If you're actually going to, you know, watch through the series, you know, 3-4 times, I think you do generally tend to have a better opinion.
You pick up more, don't you? Yeah, definitely.
I don't know, go on.
It's difficult to say because there's been, like you say, some real glimmers of hope. And then, like that Robin Hood one, you know, just comes and cuts you off at the knees and makes you just despair. Think, oh my God, what are we doing?
I was not. What are you doing? That. And no. With you saying about enjoying or getting more out of it on the rewatch, I found precisely the opposite with the Russell T. Davis episodes because they've been on gold or whatever. And I've seen some of those, and it's just, wow, this is even worse than I remember it being the first time around.
Yeah,
I mean, it's difficult because if you watch Classic Who, for me, Classic Who always has that childish innocence. And I can remember watching it as a child, and it brings back really good memories and stuff. And I could still watch it. David Tennant's episodes, I could still watch quite a lot of them. Much like David Tennant's Doctor. Matt Smith has grown on me. Christopher Eccleston I've watched once. That was it. And Peter Capaldi, I haven't ventured back into Peter Capaldi's season yet. Probably will do by the time the new season's actually ready to go. But yeah, it's just odds and sods. It seems to get to it seems to start building something and then suddenly it drops. And then it starts building again. And then you just shocked to the core. Oh, what's he done this time? No.
Find really weird about how Doctor Who's been set up, if we can consider it in approximation to similar length to US shows of like 12, 13 episodes, is that unlike US made shows where they've got that shorter season, and so they tend not to go Monster of the Week.
Yes.
Who still does that? And so you end up with this overarching arc kind of scattered throughout episodes with little tidbits hidden here and there that you just have to keep your eyes peeled for all the time. And I get fed up with having to keep my eyes peeled for all the time for stupid little niggling details, because when you don't notice it, everything feels like fucking Deus Ex Machina when it just kind of springs up in front of you.
Whereas, of course, you couldn't miss all that kind of thing in the Russell T. Davis seasons.
Well, true.
Because he was like, bad wolf! Everything's bad wolf. Look, there's graffiti saying bad wolf. Look, there's a wolf and it's bad. I wonder what bad wolf means. It must have something to do with something that's bad and a wolf. Ooh, so clever. I said, thanks, Russell. Yeah, I think we've got it now. Cheers. You can stop hitting us over the head with that.
Maybe did kind of carry over Bad Wolf as well. So, I think it was meant to kind of stop with the end of Eccleston's era. And then somehow it kind of kept back on, with, I think it was Bad Wolf Bay in the alternate kind of dimension that Rose gets trapped in.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, and Deus Ex Machina is the favourite way of Russell T. Davis to get out of anything because he couldn't think of a decent way to end it. Not that Moffat is in any way immune from that. He just uses it a little bit less.
I think Moffat, he's interesting because he kind of uses technicalities and the forward planning of the Doctor. rather than, yeah, you know,
at the same time, the Cybermen at the end of the last series was, what the fuck?
It's still not as bad as little Hobbit Gollum Doctor in a cage.
I just
walked through a room while that was playing a few weeks ago, and it was like, holy fucking shit, that actually got broadcast.
With the master. Yeah.
Believe in me!
Jesus.
Do you believe in fairies? Was what that entirely reminded me of in terms of the solution. Do you believe in fairies? The way they
clap, Peter, clap.
Oh, but it was... I mean, I haven't been happy with the series as a whole. I've just become more despondent with it with each season that
Let it fly, because otherwise I'd just go insane with it, because I'd be shouting at the TV at every little thing. So now I just let it wash. It's like, yeah, go on, get on with it. Get it over with. And then occasionally I'll enjoy something. You know, I'll really enjoy an idea they'll come up with, instead of, yeah, let's have some...
I've just remembered...
United Kingdom on a space whale.
I think
or
I've just
dinosaurs
remembered
on
which episode was my favourite of the last season. It was the heist episode. That was my favourite episode.
Yes. Oh, yes. That was ace.
Yeah, that was
really good. That's because I like... that's because I like a good caper.
Mm.
So.
I'd like to see Capaldi do more like that as well. Like that in the Orient. A bit more Tom Baker-ish. Because I think he's got the potential to do that sort of thing a lot better
He's got the potential to be one of my favourite Doctors.
Well, definitely.
I think if you remember, I think it was one of the episodes with Matt Smith, and he actually says that somebody's been calling from the Orient. And that I remember a gif about that, and it's like, oh, calling from the Orient. And then all of, you know, it's like a season later, we've got the Orient Express episode. And I think those little tiny bits, you know, that's what I mean with the rewatching.
Yeah, they do. They keep you hooked, because it's like the silence. They appeared with Matt Smith, and they didn't actually... You didn't get to see... Well, you didn't get to find out who they really were until this very last episode, did you?
Correct.
You know, which is a real nice little twist, the fact that it keeps... strings of that running along throughout the whole season, so you never quite know when you're going to get the answer.
And I have to say,
like Clara, I think there's still a bit of mystery to her.
Yeah.
But thankfully they resolved a lot of that, because I couldn't stand her in the last in Matt Smith season?
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I just did not get
she was
on
just
with
used as a plot. She seemed to be just a plot device in that
She
last
was a walking plot device. And
but then she really came to Futician with Peter Capaldi.
Yeah,
they worked really well together.
I've really liked it, because I was hoping it's like, okay, I liked Amy and Rory.
Yeah.
Mm. And they've left. Okay, fine. You know, hopefully I'll like the new character. And he's like, yeah, for a year I did not care for her at all. But this one I've liked. Whereas I don't think I liked any of the companions in the Russell T. Davis era.
Oh, I don't know. I quite liked Rose. Rose was cool.
Rose and her EastEnders light Earth shenanigans.
She had some good bits to it.
My favourite was when she left.
When it comes to the companions from Russell T. Davies series, there doesn't a lot of the time there wasn't really a lot of tension between them and the Doctor. You know, there wasn't a lot of drama created. Admittedly, you know, with Donna, which was arguably probably one of the better ones, eventually. There
was
one of
the best
ones,
yeah.
And Amy and Rory, obviously, there was, you know, spats with the Doctor and whatnot.
Yeah.
And Clara, since her meeting with Danny, I think she's become more, interesting.
Yeah, interesting.
I mean, I saw one criticism of Moffat's characters / writing, design, whatever you want to call it, where they said about his female characters, and they say, yes, he has one or two issues with, you know, some of the female characters with, you know, how they just seem to be all flirty. But then, I think every single female character who was in the Russell T. Davis seasons seemed to fall head over heels with the Doctor, starting with Rose.
Yeah, either that or they, like Donna, was like literally just, oh, gonna, you know, put this out there right now, there's no chance of romantic engagement or anything like that, we're gonna be friends, that's it.
It was Dr. Lothario going around time and space in that era, and that got very, very tired very quickly.
The thing for me though is Stephen Moffat actually wrote probably my favourite New Who ever.
Which one's that?
That's What Gives Me Hope. Blink.
Yeah. Yeah.
He wrote that, so yeah, and he bought us the Reaping Angels, which was a brilliant concept, brilliant baddie.
Being a little bit overused now, unless they, come up with something more interesting with it.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, though, because, I mean, one of the things about Who is the iconic enemies, and people are complaining more and more that, the Cybermen are overused and the Daleks are overused, and that is, fair criticism. But now it's like we've had, three Weeping Angel stories?
Yeah.
I think that's it.
Oh, at least.
Yeah, at least. I mean, the thing for me is I would like to see more...
I think just three, but yeah, could be wrong.
I would like to see more classic Who enemies come back to be used, not overly like the Daleks and Cybermen have, but, in one-offs like the Zygons.
Mm.
I'd love to see a proper story of them, because they were a brilliant character. The Yeti.
I'm not fair, because I can't remember the Yeti.
Thanks for that. I feel really old now.
I'm sure that's just my memory. There are plenty of other ones that I remember.
I think the Yeti was the last time you saw the Yeti was with Patrick Troughton.
Ah, right. That would explain it. I'm back.
Yeah.
I've managed to miss most of his for some reason.
Ah, no. Patrick Troughton is amazing.
Oh, I've loved I've seen him in, like, Two More Cybermen. That's one of my favourite.
I think the problem is a lot of them were lost, though, weren't they? Unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem. I had to catch up with them. Or wait until UK Gold got round to them. And then, especially seeing as it got relaunched, they only seem to give a shit about repeating the new ones.
Yeah, that annoys me, because I used to get up every Sunday morning at 8 o'clock, run downstairs and put UK Gold on for Classic Who. It's never on anymore. But the Howard Channel have started doing them.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
But they're not in order. That's the
annoying. I'm not surprised.
The Horror Channel just generally seems like a mess since it launched.
It's probably run out of a shared with a laptop on a dodgy extension and a Wi-Fi card.
I mean, I know the Twilight Zone's on it.
Yeah, but it's like, I think since it's been on, I've only actually seen, and I might have missed some, but I've only seen 3 episodes of Sylvester McCoy.
Wow.
He's one that I ended up revising my opinion because for years I thought he was shit. But went back to several of the episodes and it's like, it's the script and the production values that were letting him down. Otherwise,
really did well.
Yeah, he actually did well with it.
Okay,
if you actually really like him as the Doctor, give Big Finish audiobooks a chance because they have done so much with the Seventh Doctor. And Sylvester McCoy has been allowed to do what he should have been able to do on TV. He's just taken that Doctor the whole new direction. But even saying that, Colin Baker, who I detested on TV, I really did with that flamboyant jacket, the curly hair, and I was just, you're just trying too hard to be Tom Baker. What on earth are you doing? Big Finish Audio Adventures ever given him the chance to do what he was supposed to be doing during the seasons before before everything kicked off and they decided they didn't want to spend that much money on him. And again, he's really turned into a Doctor that I really am actually enjoying.
But what I want to know now is if Moffat did have to step down, is there anybody this side of the pond who could replace him?
Ah, you said this side of the pond.
Yeah.
Why did you say that? No, that's not fair.
There's
I've
not
been thinking
a lot
about
of,
this all day.
Okay, fine. It could be either side. There we go.
No, a fantasy appointment for me would be Neil Gaiman.
Ah, you nicked it. You. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Neil Gaiman, definitely, hands down.
I've quite liked several of Mark Gatiss's.
Jack Thorne?
No, he'd be good as well.
He's been a little bit wobbly when it comes to how consistent. But
Mark Gatiss or Neil Gaiman for me.
Was it Jack Jack Thorne that did the fades?
I was going to suggest the dude that did Being Human by Toby. Yeah, so Being Humans by Toby Whithouse. I would suggest him.
I've seen one episode of Being Human, and I would.
Emily, you'd have to tone things down a bit.
I wouldn't be happy about anyone who's been on that.
How about the guy behind Misfits?
Oh gosh,
that could be quite interesting.
That could be interesting.
He's Misfits
although,
again.
Less less stuff in London, thanks very much.
Yeah,
I liked Misfits, and it was set so much in London because they had no money. Whereas Doctor Who would have money, and please don't have so much stuff set on bloody present day Earth.
Okay, so the Misfits creator was Howard Overman. So, yeah, I think Misfits could work. I mean, obviously, again, it'd be kind of toning things down a bit because obviously it's got to be friendly. Friendly-ish.
Well, yeah, but the writer's done some
edgy stuff.
Yeah.
Let's see. Blokey, who did the fades? Neil Gaiman or Mark Gatiss?
Yeah. Or if we're going really, really out of the way, really sort of far left field. I think probably the guy who's done the Daredevil TV show. That'd be cool. That could be quite interesting.
You know what, I'm gonna throw a lady into the mix.
Oh, please do.
Purely.
No, go for it.
I don't think she's ever written any like sci-fi genre type stuff before, but based on the writing of Raised by Wolves, Caitlin Moran would make an interesting choice. Like as long as she had backup in terms of dealing with the sci-fi elements. I think she could really bring in some good sort of like character development and humanity.
I do
to the
really
series.
Like her stuff, but I'm really not sure about bringing in people who are mostly comedy.
But then again, Stephen Moffat, Coupling.
That's true.
Yeah,
but also Stephen Moffat, Jekyll.
I'd be very interested in seeing Caitlin Moran doing episodes. Although I do know people who would be driven batshit by that.
No, I think that's a really good idea. To be fair.
Yeah, go on, give her a go. I'd be curious to see what they do.
But I suppose really it needs to be at least somebody who's written a couple of the actual episodes. So Neil Gaiman kind of makes sense, but at the same time I can imagine the BBC not affording him. And do you know what's really bad about speculating about up to like season 10 of Who is the current trouble that the BBC is in face of the majority Conservative government win in this month's election? And the fact that they are obviously looking to change the agreements over the licence fee. So while one arm of BBC does make money off of Doctor Who, and that would be BBC Worldwide, the core of the BBC doesn't necessarily make tons of money.
I thought they made money off the merchandise, though, wouldn't they? Off the merchandise and DVD sales and everything else.
Oh, it makes them money, especially the DVD and Blu-ray.
I mean, it does make me think, because how's BBC America modelled? Does that actually get funded back into the BBC?
I'm not entirely sure.
It's part BBC Worldwide.
Because I always remember conversations with people, apart from when they're complaining that ITV have too many repeats, so they hate paying the licence fee. And that's when I point out that that's for the BBC and a bit of Channel 4. It's not for ITV. It's the BBC TV license. It's not ITV.
Yeah.
One of the things that complain about is, how come we have to pay for, back at the time, it was, the videotapes are so expensive to buy TV series that we've already watched, or buying tapes or CDs of stuff that was on radio. It's like, that's because it's released commercially.
Yeah.
So the money goes back into the BBC. It's not you're not paying for the same thing again. You pay for it to get it free on TV and radio, and of course nowadays on demand. But if you want them in those things, they're not released by the BBC that you fund. That's the, can we have some extra monies, please?
Yeah. But, they do, mate.
I think. Which I'm more than happy to support with certain things.
Definitely, yeah. But it's like they get money off Big Finish as well for the license. I'm assuming they must get money off each sale as well.
But okay, I think we've managed to exhaust discussing Doctor Who. So people are reasonably happy.
We've exhausted Moffat.
Can I
just maybe
just going off topic a little bit?
That never happens.
Never, never, never. But have you seen Arthur DeVille's new role?
Oh, was it something to do with DC?
Rip Turner. Yes. Huh? He's going to be the time traveling hero, Rip Turner.
Blank faces.
Yeah, is
DC have been trying to step into the foray of TV with a kind of unified universe, and obviously Arrow and Flash have kind of started doing that, and the new Supergirl. Is that actually meant to be part of it as well? Can we
move this on then and talk about that trailer for Supergirl that was released last week?
No.
Why not?
To be honest, I actually quite liked it.
I preferred the fan one that came out afterwards, which made it look a bit more, I don't know, appeasing, but the actual trailer was a bit... I don't know.
Heard people complaining about how girly she was, to which I say, why not?
Well, no, I've got no problems with being girly. I think it was the whole goofy aspect of it.
You didn't like the goofy aspect?
You wouldn't like the unbeatable Squirrel Girl. Pah!
No, I thought it was made a bit like, too much a bit like the old Clark Kent with his glasses on and everything.
I kind of found it endearing because she was less sure of herself for genuine reasons. Mm.
Yeah, that bit was fine. It was just, I don't know. And Jimmy Olsen suddenly turned up in it was a bit, really? Mm-hmm. Okay.
I thought it was all right. By far, the biggest problem I had with it was with the crappy girl band music that kept
flaring
up in the background.
That was an issue.
Where it's like...
I think... They are probably going to be trying to advertise this towards the female market because they realise that, even women like superheroes now.
Yeah.
The impression
the only
I
problem
get
is that,
it,
that obviously they're going to be too girly with it. Well, there's a risk of it being too girly.
What I've said about, Flash is it's very Saturday tea time to me, which means, to me, that they're aiming at the sort of teenage market.
Yeah,
they seem to think that that's their target, and it's I'm not sure. Maybe for the comics, I'm not quite sure about the TV series and the films. But okay, if they want to do that. And when it comes to Supergirl, after seeing the 6 minutes or so, the extended trailer, whatever,
I only saw the first one. I only saw the sort of minute and a half one.
Ah, well, you should hunt it out. It's about 6 minutes long, and it goes into a little bit more. But, I was watching that and I'm thinking, it's not aimed at me.
Hmm.
Which isn't
and
necessarily
that's kind
a problem.
Of fine. Yeah, it's like, oh well. I get the impression that The Flash isn't necessarily aimed at me either.
I mean, let's face it, if we stuck to only stuff that has been aimed at us, then there would be no bronies out there.
Also,
let's not.
The Supergirl trailer reminded me of a cross between... In Smallville and the Mindy Project, and in that way, I kind of liked it. That's the vibe I was getting. Meanwhile, I'm not going to go into it in detail, but the Mindy Project, after being cancelled by Fox last week, got picked up by Hulu for 26 episodes.
Oh, I didn't realise that bit.
Like in the past couple of days. So yeah.
Oh, that's what that was about.
Mm. And yet, we still haven't got Constantine saved.
Nope. But then the Mindy Project had actually at least survived to, 3-4 seasons?
Yeah.
So it was already a properly proven element.
They're probably thinking there's enough episodes there that if they chuck them up and it's so many adverts per episode for people to watch through and...
Yeah.
Probably think, that's enough.
I still want Constantine back.
Yes.
Please.
We've got the DVD box set of Constantine.
Yeah.
Oh, didn't realize it was out.
It was just on offer, and it was like, okay, go on then.
Well, I didn't realise
what's going on, Emily's
until last night.
Mm-hmm.
It was the guy who played Constantine,
Yeah.
Actually starred in a video game as well before Constantine.
Assassin's Creed Black Flag.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's very recognisable from it.
Yeah, I recognised it as soon as he started saying mate on it the other night. I was like, what?
Yeah, just I recognise mate.
That. That sounds familiar. What's going on here? Hmm.
Where's that? Okay, I'm going to move us on to another bit of news that was... I know we've talked about Netflix and stuff a lot, but what was interesting was that last week at Cannes, Netflix's Ted Sarandos was heckled whilst giving a talk about upending the movie business. Like, actual professionals started heckling him as he talked about how the current studio and cinematic release model was broken and was, you know, that needed modernising, i.e., you know, releasing stuff simultaneously to stream and in cinemas, and he got heckled for it.
Really? Oh, bless him.
Meanwhile, it took Weinstein, I can't pronounce the surnames ever.
But guy.
One of them, one of those brothers that owns that film company, like... Oh, which one? It says in the article which one it is.
Anyway, can you...
Anyway, yeah, they... So they you
is
know...
it Roger Sony, owner of Sony Pictures?
Not quite. Harvey. It was Harvey Weinstein. Anyway, yeah, so he gets heckled whilst talking about how Netflix has been trying to go around making content and stuff and talking about how they've been trying to create original content, which is now including films. And they're spending something like $10 to $50 million a film to make it, which is high money for stuff that isn't great big special effects bloated stuff, like basically all the Marvel films and DC really once it comes once they get more out. Yeah, he was just kind of talking about how, well, you know, it's getting a bit ridiculous that we're insisting on this cinematic model. Of course, cinema owners and certainly chain owners are pissed off, obviously, at the idea of there being simultaneous release and stream. But the thing is that I feel that cinemas, especially as the, sort of the growth of the multiplex, they've kind of forgotten how they can make the screening difference, screening experience different from home. So it's like, well, if you did have simultaneous release, for which there have been a couple of things that this has happened. Well, yeah, with some TV stuff, but also it's happened with a couple of films so far.
Yes, it has. And I can't remember them.
Yeah, but it has happened.
I remember what, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like, well, your cinema's a really big social experience with...
Which is precisely why I hate it.
Meanwhile, you know, at home you've got more control over... what's happening and stuff. It just felt a bit like the sort of people who were kind of embedded in the cinema system at the moment were being kind of selfish, because actually getting to the cinema is kind of inconvenient for a lot of people. It's inconvenient for people who've got disabilities, trying to get access and stuff, because obviously there's going to only be limited seating available if for disabled people at each screening.
My mother-in-law has a lot of trouble with that because she's in a wheelchair. And, yeah, we have the Warner Village in Carlisle, and that has some access, you know, for, you know, disabled and wheelchair users. But it's far from ideal, and she has to come in the back entrance as well. Like, all that kind of thing, and it's just...
Yeah.
It's just frustrating, isn't it?
It's one of those things, though, with kind of every industry, when it undergoes a change like that, there's always this massive fear that they're going to lose their funding model and, you know, everything's just going to go
put. It's not even just disabled.
The problem
is you've got,
times change.
Yeah, but I just want to mention a few other groups affected by not being able to go to cinema. So you've got people with actual, physical disabilities find it difficult. Pregnant women. You know, once you get past a certain point in the pregnancy, it is very hard to stay...
I've just got this image of a woman in the cinema, 9 months pregnant, watching like a Transformers film.
What, and the walls break?
Yes.
To be fair, the waters might be able to break due to the from the freaking speakers.
I'm sure the baby would want to just stay away from the screen if it's Transformers. But, it's like, what the hell is this? I'm staying here.
Or
for
people
now.
who aren't even in wheelchairs who find it difficult to sit in cinema seats because there's not actually, like, for instance, unless you sit in the front, there's not a lot of leg room a lot of the time.
You're surrounded by assholes.
Yeah. Also, obviously, not each screening can have like maybe audio description or subtitles.
Although sometimes I have been in films where there has been an audio description from someone behind me, and they won't shut the fuck up.
But you know, like at least with
I know you've seen this before me.
At least with
At
least with a streamed release, you know, people who've got issues with sight or hearing. Would probably actually get releases where they've been catered for and they can access it when they want.
And also, people in the cinema get really pissed off with you if you pause the film to go have a piss.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or get a drink or something.
But also, it's like, what about, like, I don't know, say you've just had kids, you know, you've got young kids, you can't take them to the cinema, you miss out on all the films. And it's like, well... there's people who can't easily go to the cinema for mostly health or family reasons.
That reminds me of the Frozen sing-along stuff that we've had off with the kids.
Going to a Frozen sing-along screening is like entering the depths of hell. You know, there's
like
nine circles.
Rookie horror picture show.
Only less fun and more crap being thrown everywhere potentially. Maybe literally in some cases.
I mean, it was bad enough going to see Paddington and, like, at one of the sad moments when, you know how, you know, movies, you know, high points, low points. At one of the low points, all you heard was, like, this kid in the back going, it's like... I kind of understand in a way, but by the same token, it's
So rolling this back to Netflix Man being heckled by people at Cannes... yeah, it's kind of like, well, Netflix's model, you know, kind of works for the convenience of viewers. Obviously, there's an industry that exists purely not for the convenience of viewers, but for the convenience of themselves. Mm. So, yes, they're two very conflicting cultures, but one is going to have to adapt at some point. And also, if you consider that obviously, the cost of distribution has gone down anyway, so...
Yeah, which is kind of paradoxical because it still costs an absolute ton to basically rent a movie to actually show it in the cinema screen. And the prices are still quite high in cinemas as well.
Yeah, and another reason that I don't like cinemas. Because it's just how much for the film, and then I'll get a drink. How much?! And then...
But you can't eat the Ben and Jerry's ice cream there.
Can you? No?
What? Not with the hot chocolate fudge sauce ripped all around it and all the chocolate sprinkles. The flake.
I would if I was lactose intolerant.
Has anyone got...
I'd be sitting there with a deep pan pizza.
So yeah, so basically what happened in Cannes last week was a bunch of mostly probably old dudes, if we consider what the stereotype usually is for people working in this industry, freaking out over new shit. And to be fair, if Netflix dude had been giving the same speech at a TV broadcaster's conference, he probably would have got a similar reaction, because they are also failing to move with the times. Anyway, anyone else got some quick snippets of news before we go on to what we've been up to?
Only how excited I was to see the Doom trailer.
Hey, also,
tiny snippet.
All 20 milliseconds of it.
Yeah, what was this? I saw stuff suddenly appear in my timeline. I was like, eh?
It was literally just 2 seconds long.
Okay.
You saw a massive skeleton with what looked like a massive rocket launcher attached to it, and that was it. But it was enough to whet my appetite for more.
I like Doom.
Doom's ace.
Oh, meanwhile, in industry, game journalism industry news, people freaked out over Plaid today. And Check.
Over what?
Plaid.
As in the clothing material.
Yes.
Oh,
and Checkered shirts. A reaction to an article by, I want to say Holly Nielsen?
Was it that one about, like, 90s fashion?
Not quite. It was basically, she kind of pointed out that lots of... it was kind of like a way of looking at how most of games journalism is done by guys, but looking at it through the medium of clothing, because whenever you step into most spaces apparently to do with gaming, you are surrounded by men in either plaid or checkered shirts.
I have to say, from my experience, no.
Yeah.
I've known a few people with, you know, sort of like plaid or, you know, checkered, but by and large... No.
But basically, she was just trying to use it as some kind of, you know, symbolism for the fact that, oh, know, it's mostly men on, in these spaces.
On. I've got 5 checkered shirts myself. What?
To be fair, I had issues taking the article, well, not necessarily seriously, but, like, thinking of plaid in a negative light, considering how much Supernatural I've consumed in, like, the past 5 months. It's kind of difficult.
You're plaid neutral.
I'm...
Or plaid positive.
I don't know, I think I...
Are you plaid positive?
I'm plaid positive. I think I might have some, how should I put it, you know, Pavlov's dogs. Yeah. Right. Well, sort of similar kind of like...
Tingling.
I can't...
Oh, dear.
Plaid. It's, yeah, plaid.
Correct. Plaid is definitely...
Plaid.
Plaid.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't
know. Now I just think of a Steve Martin film.
so yeah, I'm a lumberjack. Meanwhile, some of the people that do wear the plaid shirts have got beards that lumberjacks would be pretty impressed by. So
I do know a few with beards.
Oh.
I'm trying
to get
there.
Stroking his own
beard. And I've just remembered the best remaking news that came out in this past week. Sony are remaking The Craft.
Yeah, whatever.
I think if they'd announced this perhaps 4 or 5 years ago, it might be something
to
make the money.
That seems to come out of nowhere. My entire... Because I've got very little attachment to that film. I've seen it.
Yeah.
And it's got Neve Campbell in, doesn't it?
What they needed to do was genuinely release that. Yeah. They needed to have got that idea into their heads and then got it out already sort of by now, because it's the kind of remake which you could have captured the post-Twilight crowd with.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, why?
Yeah.
Not sure why.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it, you know, just working through a pile of stuff to ruin for people who like the originals? And you say, oh yeah, we'll ruin
that. I mean, the original is not necessarily the best of 90s cinema. However, it has some rather memorable moments, like Lightest of Ever, Stiff as a Board, blah, blah, for which I went to sleepovers where girls tried that out. That was funny. Funny ha-ha for them thinking something stupid like that would work and giggling. Far, far too much. So much giggling. But yeah, so what have people been up to? I am apparently going first looking at this thing.
Like, you're the one that wrote it.
What have you been up to then, Emily?
Well,
tell us.
I
what haven't you been up to?
Hey, went through Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. last week and Walking Dead. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. got in. I think last week's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was actually really freaking interesting because we had parties aligning themselves that we didn't expect to see aligning themselves with each other. It was just kind of like, oh, it's so the enemy of my enemy is, oh my god, wait, what?
La 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 la.
Are you trying to not have it spoiled for you, Retroid?
I can take my earphones off.
But yeah, so
you gotta spoil
it does
anything.
Get very interesting.
Yeah, I think it has got better.
Yeah, it's got better. What episode are we on now? Was that 17 or 18 last week?
I don't know.
Anyway, so it's only maybe like 5 episodes left of the season. So,
Yay. Yeah,
it's shit's getting a bit real, hopefully. You know, fingers crossed.
It's an interesting twist to it. And it's an interesting arc.
It
gets better.
Meanwhile, in the 2 episodes of The Walking Dead that were on Spike last week, it was a lot of kind of showing backstory, showing what happened to particular characters, either in how they got into the situation they were in, like so some of the characters that were introduced the previous season, and with one particular character finding out what happened to her during one particular kind of long interlude where she was separated from everyone else. So that was good to actually watch. And also, cool. Like, I can't really spoil it, I suppose, but finding out that one character was not what he said he was a pretty big shock. I mean, like, you kind of been suspecting it, but to actually have it set out in the open, and then for the reactions to this revelation by the other characters. Because
several others have kind of been resting on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just kind of like, whoa. So yeah, and then Supernatural. So I've watched, like, I think the first, maybe the second episodes of season 5. Meanwhile, Dave Internet allowed me to watch Supernatural live on Wednesday night. And
cool.
He's helpful, Dave Internet.
Yeah, and so yeah. I watched it whilst surrounded by a bunch of people in an IRC chat room going batshit crazy, as the episode proved to be way better than the previous week's episode. It was shit hitting all kinds of fans, and bits of dialogue that will be forever etched into my mind, including, you know, a line that Dean said where, you know, seven nipples for the ladies, and the guys, I don't judge. That was a line in the episode referring to seven nipples.
Okay.
Yeah. That's how crazy last week's episode got, and it was really tense, and you knew it was the episode before Carry On My Wayward Son is going to start playing.
It was so tense, your seven nipples were tingling.
Thank you very much, you little bugger. God. But yeah, Cookie, what have you been up to?
Probably suddenly gone after dark again.
Yeah, probably. wait. One other thing, Supernatural related, and this is going to scare people. I decided to start reading one of the most lauded Supernatural fanfics from the past year called Twist and Shout. And apart from the typos that I keep noticing...
because you can't help it.
I can't help it. It's kind of ingrained. Like, I can't do it with my own work, but somebody else's, you know. They, like, burn into my eyes. Anyway, yeah, that's an interesting read.
Is that good interesting or bad interesting?
It's good interesting, but it does get quite smutty in places whilst having an incredible amount of plot. So, yeah. Anyway, okay. Cookie.
Yeah.
What have you been up to?
I have been killing Navy soldiers and nicking ships and becoming a pirate. Because
is it the pirate's life for you?
But have you been playing computer games as well?
Do what you want, because a pirate is free. You are a pirate. You're a fiddle-dee-dee. Etc.
So, absolutely. Yeah, no, I've been playing Assassin's Creed Black Flag once more. I had it on PS3. Unfortunately, my PS3 has gone, so I ended up picking another copy up from the Xbox One.
You're starting all over again.
Yeah.
Like, and I've got exactly to say, still... transfer the file.
But you've been having fun, then? Cookie?
Maybe he's off plundering and making people walk planks.
And pillaging.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, killing whales, skinning iguanas.
What did the iguanas ever do to you?
Oh, I've got to eat somehow. I've got to feed my crew. Oh,
poor iguanas.
And make stuff.
Yeah, exactly. But no, it's just one of the best in the series, I think. I still haven't got around to playing Unity because I haven't picked that up yet. But, I'm still waiting for it to become a bit more bug-free.
Yeah. Oh, Ubisoft
Black Flag is pretty much my favourite of the series.
I think it's just really cool how they mix the naval, the boats, fights and everything else together.
I've just remembered some real games news. Ubisoft are no longer going to be producing the Assassin's Creed series for the Xbox 360 and PS3.
They're not going to be doing much on the PS3 and 360.
However, Just Dance will still be ported.
Oh, well then.
Well done, Ubisoft.
The formats are saved. That's all I ever want to play on them.
I can't really see you doing them. You can't touch this on Just Dance. I don't know why.
You can't touch my trousers. I can't remember if you can't touch this or Hammer Time.
You don't know
time.
What trousers I have.
One of those is on the original, I think it's the original Just Dance. And yeah, it's really hard.
Yeah, I know.
It's ridiculously hard.
I've given myself a hernia over that.
Speaking of Just Dance, I remember I was looking it up because I thought it might have been an idea, you know, when I was getting fit. And so I thought, I'll look for video reviews and stuff like that. And so, do you know what most of the videos are of Just Dance?
Nope. And I don't think I want to.
Young, probably not teenage, girls dancing to it and, you know, sort of dressed in a little bit less than they probably should be at that age. And it's just...
No.
There's so much wrong.
So moving swiftly on.
Yeah, moving very swiftly on. It's like, you know, I just clicked, you know, one, and I thought, okay, maybe this is just this particular one. This is a bit wrong. Right, I'll find another one very quickly. And, you know, went to another one from a completely different user, and it was the same kind of thing. And it was just, I'm going to close this tab and hope there's not a knock at the door. Because I feel so wrong. It's just, this is not a good thing to see.
So the other thing I've been doing...
Yeah, please go on.
Is I've been hunting monsters down in Evolve. I've been giving that another shot. And I've actually got more into it now.
Alien.
Yeah, I've actually got more into it. I started doing the... still multiplayer, but on the sort of campaign mode. Where you have to, you've got different missions on this planet where the monsters are evolving, and you've got to save the colony, and there's other bits you need to do, like destroy the eggs before they hatch, hunt the monster, save so-and-so, make sure the power relay isn't destroyed. It takes place on 5 missions over 5 days, and at the end of each mission you get how many colonists you've saved or killed because you failed in your mission, and you get stats. But what is quite nice about it is everything you do leads on to the next mission, and it affects the environment.
Right.
So for the first mission, if you've got to stop the monster and you fail, when you come back, the power relay has been destroyed. There's not even so many defense turrets available, and other little bits of the environment have changed, and it always changes differently. They reckon there's about 800,000 combinations that you can play through.
Why?
Which is pretty damn good. If you win the first one, you get more defense turrets around the power relay and other bits. It's quite interesting, and it's quite... I've played it for quite a few hours, and every time I did play a mission, everything you did before did take an aspect of how the map became born in the next one.
Go on.
And it also rotates on what you actually have to do. So one time you're playing the map and it's rescue, the next time you're playing the map and it's all-out attack against the monster. It's quite interesting. You still have to have a good group of people to play with, to be fair. Because if you get stuck with the boy who goes charging off Lone Ranger style, like I did on Saturday, into the midst of the monster and ends up dead within 5 seconds, you're sort of, cool. Okay. Oh, you're the medic as well. I'm going to last long. Yippee! You Azek.
Now, my wondering when I've seen, you know, videos of it and such is which is it closer to, Left 4 Dead or something like Team Fortress 2?
I'd say more Left 4 Dead because it's definitely more. It's more based on co-op. But, actually, Team Fortress. You've got me now.
Because I liked the
thinking about it logically,
progression and sort of telling a story with the environment that Left 4 Dead did, and
it does of all seems very arena-y. Yeah, it is more of arena style, like Team Fortress, but there is a bit more of a story there than probably was with Team Fortress. So there's
outside
a little
of
bit
the
more.
Gears.
Yeah, outside, but it's not as deeply involved as Left 4 Dead, I don't think, because you've only got the 5 missions for your campaign. So, yeah, the story sort of, there is a bit more of a story. But then it's actually got aspects more like Team Fortress, which I think Paul would like you've got the medic, and each one, like the assault category, and there's a trapper as well. They've all got different weapons and different perks and different unique abilities, which you can level up.
Does it have hats?
Some of the characters do have hats, but you can't shop.
Boo!
Oh, hats.
With all the DLC stuff I heard about this game, I would have thought it would definitely have hats.
Not that I've seen.
Paul, what have you been up to?
I've been arrested.
In development?
In development.
Oh, yeah.
No, I've been clicking on too many YouTube links and coming across the Just Dance videos.
I told you not to search for Just Dance videos.
You just had to go there.
So I've been watching a little bit of Arrested Development. It's kind of second time through. The first time through, I think we got to near the end of Series 3. I don't think we actually finished watching all of Series 3. Does everybody already know the plot of Arrested Development a little bit?
Nope. Never watched it.
Fair enough. A guy and his son basically take over the family business after their father
fucks up.
Yeah, fucks up and is kind of put in jail. And so he not only is he having to look after the business though, the rest of his family, so like mother, brothers, and sister, and niece and whatnot, they're all pretty much.
He tries to fulfill the role of patriarch, and it is a difficult role to fill.
Right, okay.
The banana stand looks after itself. there's so many bits I love from that series. I just made a huge mistake.
Absolutely. It does have its moments. And I mean, I remember seeing this one diagram on the internet about different shows for different people. It's like, oh yes, and Arrested Development is kind of a show about stupid people for smart people, and it's like, yeah, it's a show about stupid people, but not necessarily for smart people. Then it had a Big Bang Theory as a a dumb show for no. It's a smart show for dumb people, I think it was. I've got that. And it's like, no, actually, there's some stuff that, geeky to really get.
I would say it's a geeky series for not necessarily geeks.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's definitely non-geek friendly. And again, most of the people I've known who've... what was it? I found out that my brother-in-law's mother watches Big Bang Theory, which blows my mind.
My mum watches Big Bang Theory. And she's not gonna. The closest she gets to geeking out is she watches The Walking Dead, which she loves because of its soap opera like elements.
And she likes Thor because of Chris.
Because of Thor.
Hemsworth, yeah.
He's hot.
Oh dear.
Not my type, I'm afraid. I prefer Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, you're a Jackman. Man. Wait, you're a Jackman man.
Wait, though. What
huge,
else have you watching?
Hugh Jackman.
What else have you been up to?
What else have I been up to? I've been watching a selection of different YouTube videos recently. So
are we not going back there?
No. Not those type of videos. I'm into all sorts of different kind of sciencey type stuff and a whole load of different stuff, to be honest. I've got a load of science-based ones, subscriptions to them. And I've got, philosophy, ones, video gaming ones, just random kind of interesting cool. ones. And yeah, so I do surf around on YouTube's quite a bit, and do find some interesting videos sometimes. Sometimes
one particular video highlight from the past week. If you had to pick one that it really interested you,
right? Okay,
it's Gangnam Style, isn't it?
No, the one that I actually found today was I think it was from was it Computer? Something or other, but yeah, it basically talks about different kind of aspects of kind of, say, for example, coding and why passwords a lot of the time they're nowhere near as secure as you think they are, and all sorts of different interesting stuff with kind of computers and how like code can kind of break and kind of risk, you know, pretty much a kind of an apocalypse on the internet, as it were. So wow. Yeah,
cool.
Quite interesting videos there. I'll try and remember the name of the channel.
Okay.
Yeah.
There are some brilliantly nerdy channels out there and people doing stuff on YouTube. And then, yes. Unfortunately, half the time when you finish watching them, you get some crackpot being advertised.
Yeah.
To you as the, mm-hmm. you know, you could watch this next. Mm. Oh, you've watched something about quasars and the frequency in, you know, certain areas of the, you know, the universe. Therefore, you need to know about this video that talks about Earth's twin that's on the exact opposite side of the sun and that NASA's hiding from us because it's got aliens. I was like, no, I don't. It's weird, but I don't. Thanks.
But, Retro, what have you been up to?
Well, I said a few weeks ago that I'd picked up a DSi XL.
Mm. Yes.
Nice and cheaply. And I've been, you know, picking up one or two things, and some things I've had for a while, but because I didn't have a DS of my own, I've not played. Hmm. Like, ages ago, I picked up for £3 from Morrison's Mario Kart DS.
Oh, £3?
£3.
That's a bargain and a half.
Blimey.
Sealed.
Whoa.
Just sometimes they'll have, you know, stocks of games, and it will sit there on the shelf for...
ever.
I'm not surprised, because Nintendo games, they're the type of games that will kind of just basically stay at the same price until they're
gone. Yeah, that's why I hate trying to shop for these platforms, because it, by and large, you say, oh, it's 5 years old. That's more than it was when it came out, for fuck's sake. But in this case, I had Mario Kart DS and I'd not played it, but, you know, sat down and played it because I had on Elite Dangerous and I'm on one of my exploration phases, which usually means lots of, you know, remote star systems with several minutes of not doing anything between either a planet or, you know, stars within a system.
Yeah.
So you were metagaming.
I was playing Elite Dangerous and, you know, flipping open the, you know, DSi and playing, you know, a bit of Mario Kart, and was that the first version that had the blue shell, or was it the GameCube?
Oh, blue shell's been around for absolutely ages. Like, I think the N64 had it.
I was going to say, I thought it was the N64.
Yeah.
Are you sure the N64 had it?
Yeah, pretty damn sure.
I'm not 100% sure.
I can't remember it being in the N64. I'm not saying you're wrong, but I just can't remember it. Mind you, I didn't really get on with the N64 version of Mario Kart. The SNES version is still the best to me. Yes. But yeah, I'm really enjoying the, you know, the DS version, and I'm thinking it's going to be a lot of unlocking.
Yes.
Because I was playing on the 50cc just to, you know, get used to it again. And it's, oh good, it only unlocks the subsequent cups on that difficulty level. It doesn't unlock them on the higher ones either, and so, oh, you swine.
How many cc does the Wii U Mario Kart 8 go up to now?
Was
that latest update?
Was it 200 or 250? Yeah.
Which one?
I think it was 200.
Yeah.
200.
Yeah. One or two, and it's, yeah. I mean, I still can't beat the Wii U's version of Rainbow Road on 150 cc.
Wow.
Because it's just that, like, no,
it this the DS version, I'm trying to remember if the ones I've, you know, I'm recognizing on it, because I know some of them are from, you know, the older ones, but I'm thinking, have I, because I've played it before on my nephew's, you know, DS. And I'm trying to remember if one of the tracks I was, you know, playing on it is from the GameCube version or not, because I have the GameCube version, I just never got around to playing it much. But yeah, it's just, I'm trying to remember what particular tracks I remember from, you know, other versions.
Yeah.
The ones that aren't explicitly stated as, you know, like GBA or, you know, whatever. But yeah, I've been really enjoying that, and I'm thinking, I think I'll have to dig out the GameCube version as well and give that a bash.
Definitely.
I've also picked up from one of the, I think it's Cash Generator, which seems to be one of those chains. They had a copy of Final Fantasy III for the DS for a fiver.
Bargain.
So, you know, I checked that it came with everything, and it did. And it's, oh, go on then, because I don't think I played Final Fantasy III on the... now, was that an NES or a
NES game? I thought it was NES.
It could well be. I'm not sure. But with them also screwing up the releasing, you know, in the US and Western, with the, you know, the numbers before they finally became a universal number for, you know, on the PlayStation 1 from
seven
you know, Final Fantasy VII onwards. Yeah. So it's a good chance I've never played it anyway. And it's a, yeah, apart from the graphics looking a little bit wobbly, to be generous to it, reminds me of, like, you know, early PS1 stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm enjoying it. I've not played it much. I've only just got out of my village.
That might, because I'm a bit fuzzy on the earlier Final Fantasies. Final Fantasy 3, that wasn't the 3D remake, was it?
Yes.
It is, yeah.
It's a 3D remake of 3.
Mm.
Whereas they had released Final Fantasy 3 in the US before, but it was actually Final Fantasy 6 on SNES.
That's right.
Hence all the...
Are you sure it was 6?
It was 6. Final Fantasy 3, as it was called, I'm pretty sure. You know, okay, on its so release in the US.
I know 6 involved characters like Kefka and Terra.
I can't remember. Because I own it on PS1.
Okay.
But I, again, it's one of those where I got with a bunch of other things at the time, and of course it's a big RPG.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to invest all the time at that particular time. But it's a, yeah, something, having something like Final Fantasy III, which is actually Final Fantasy III, bloody Nintendo of America, actually having that on a device that I can just suspend at any time is very handy.
Yeah.
So I've been carrying that around the house and occasionally just, you know, flipping it open and, you know, right, talking to a few characters, doing this, you know, doing a few random battles, leveling up a little bit, going here, because this, you know, ooh, there are, you know, something terrible has happened to this town to the south. Oh, yeah, there's definitely nothing for me to do down there, then go south. So I've been enjoying that, and, yeah, it will be the first time I've played an RPG since, was it Golden Sun on the GBA?
Wow.
Cool.
Oh, well, not counting the Zelda Seasons. Oh, yeah, Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Seasons, which Paul hasn't played, has he?
you take great pride in that, don't you?
Yes, I do.
I've never been a fantastic fan of the, well, of most of the Nintendo or any portable consoles, to be honest. I mean, I have, you know, kind of owned GBA onwards, but I've never really been a prolific user of them.
I know there are definite downsides to having them. That I think the GBA was the last one I got because it was, oh, right, the same thing's happening again. Everything's too bloody expensive. It's not coming down in price. Or it's disappearing from the shops entirely if I don't buy it on launch.
Yeah.
You know, sod this. Oh, and also the only place, because I bought the original non-lit GBA, the only place in the house I could actually play games reliably was standing up in the bathroom. Or standing next to a window on a really sunny day. So that really enamored me to it. But yeah, I do recommend if you can get hold of them. And it's like, for Christ's sake, Nintendo, why aren't you releasing these on, you know, the 3DS as a minimum? I mean, yeah. I don't understand how
they... Have you been up to anything else?
Yeah. Well, before I go ranting about Nintendo again.
Yeah.
I was being nice about them. Mm-hmm. I'm enjoying their hardware and games.
Mm-hmm.
is that a disbelief or is that... What?
What, being nice, but... Dave Internet decided to call himself Bruce this weekend, and so Dave Internet was Australian, because Australian Netflix has Pacific Rim and a few other things. Actually, I'm not sure if anyone else has Pacific Rim, but I was already logged in. I mean, Dave Internet was in Australia, because he'd watched Captain America Winter Soldier.
Cool.
Last week. So he thought it would be an idea to watch Pacific Rim.
Because I still haven't watched that.
I really quite enjoyed it. It is a monster film, but there's more to it. There's, you know, it seems a bit more sci-fi-y than I thought it might initially be. Yeah. So I really quite enjoyed it. I will try not to spoil or anything. There's not that much to spoil
it. We haven't seen it yet.
It's giant robots beating up giant aliens.
Cool.
But it's like well done. Sounds like a plan to me. And the criticism I heard about the female pilot, I thought didn't really hold up because it was adequately explained within the story. Because... the main character has to pair up with a female co-pilot, and things go a little bit wrong to start off with. But it is explained within the story, and it does make sense. So I've got absolutely no problem with that. But
yeah.
As a big big monster movie, I enjoyed it a lot more than any of the Godzilla remakes they've done.
Okay, so I'm assuming that you might have played a tiny bit of Elite Dangerous. Not that we need specifics.
Tiny bit?
The server's been a bit bitchy?
Yes, they kept bloody dropping out, and it was really annoying because I'd be cruising along, and I'd be playing a little bit of Mario Kart or having a snufty at Final Fantasy III.
Yeah.
And it would just pop up going, bing, unable to connect to server. With the rather ominous, unable to find ED server. And say, what? Someone's dropped the Elite Dangerous server. Someone's dropped the universe.
Ouch.
Whoa.
That's a bit painful.
Mm.
But I managed to play a bit more of it today without that happening. Because it has happened a few times before. I mean, it never used to happen that much, but I saw a lot of people complaining about it on the Facebook group. Mm. I mean...
Okay.
Saying it's not just me, I can't get on. I'm thinking, no, mate, it's not just you, because I've just tried three times and been kicked off.
Okay.
But I'm adventuring. I'm going towards the the North America Nebula.
Okay.
Which is way out and away from civilized space. So there's no one there.
Excellent.
Okay, well, I think that is all we've
got. Yeah, I wasn't commenting on America, though.
Yeah, I think that's all we've got time for this week. So it is goodbye from...
It's goodnight from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's goodnight from me, Paul, a.k.a. OneArmed_Cookie on Twitter.
It's goodnight from me, Paul Blewett, and I'm on Twitter as @PaulBlewett.
And it's goodnight from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter @EK6891. You can find the show notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. Do tweet us, and if we do like to read out tweets, when we get them. We're also on Facebook and Google+, as Nerd Assemble Podcast. Don't forget to check out hexdimension.com, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.